Do you need help recruiting great global talent for your startup? Check out today's sponsor, Outwork Staffing. Outwork Staffing can help you hire customer support, virtual assistants, developers, or whoever you need. You pay a one-time hiring fee after they find your ideal candidate, and that's it. No additional costs, even if your new hire stays for years. If they don't work out in the first 6 months, Outwork Staffing will find you a replacement free of charge. Interested? Visit outworkstaffing.com/startups to book a call and get $500 off your first placement by mentioning this podcast. It's another episode of Startups for the Rest of Us. I am your host, Rob Walling, and today I talk with James Mooring, the co-founder of Astalti. James and his co-founder have a pretty incredible story of bootstrapping a vertical SaaS app to seven figures in ARR in 18 months. A lot of things went right for them, but it's obvious that James and his co-founder are very smart and executed exceptionally well. I know that sometimes it's helpful to hear founder stories of people failing, making mistakes, picking themselves back up. And sometimes it's inspiring and you can learn a lot from the tactics, the strategies, and the approaches that someone used to achieve relatively fast success and quick growth. And as James and his co-founder have done, they've built an enviable business by all measures. And one thing I like about this conversation is it's not just the headline of how they bootstrapped the seven-figure business in 18 months, but James is very thoughtful about how they did it. And sometimes when you talk to folks, they don't really know how they did it. They lucked into it and they claim it was all word of mouth and virality and, you know, these things that it's like, well, that's A, that's not helpful to me if I want to grow a business, and B, I don't actually think that's what happened. With James, he's given it a lot of thought. And I think directionally, he's pretty correct with why they were successful, which is even more helpful for you listening to this podcast, because now you can potentially take some of the learnings from his journey and apply them to yours. And with that, let's dive into my conversation. James, welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us.
Perfect. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
It's nice to have you on, sir. So your company is Astalti, and your H1 is Simplify Your NDIS Business Operations. Ready to take your NDIS business to the next level? Try Astalti, the most straightforward NDIS software with the most advanced features. What is NDIS? I've never heard of this. I had to Google, literally had to Google it before this. So if someone does not live in Australia, describe what NDIS is and then what your software does.
I think some people that do live in Australia still probably don't know, but nice. The NDIS is the National Disability Insurance Scheme. So it's essentially a government-funded scheme that provides funding to people that have a disability to go and access supports from service providers for a range of different things. Could be accessing the community, it could be accommodation, it could be, you know, assistance at home with self-care, things like that. So, you know, our software provides a platform for businesses that provide those supports to those people with a disability to run their business.
Got it. And so is it like, I often call, let's say Gymdesk is a tiny seed company and their software is like the operating system for a gym. Like your entire business runs on it, people check in and out with a key fob to get in the thing and that tracks that they're there, and it does invoicing and billing and subscriptions. And, you know, just imagine everything that a gym or a dojo or a yoga studio, a fitness studio needs. So it's kind of the OS, right? The operating system of that gym. Is that what Astalti does for these NDIS? They're not affiliates. What, the NDIS providers?
NDIS providers, yeah. NDIS okay. Service providers. Yeah, so we, you know, the term CRM is very common here for what we do, but essentially how you've described it is exactly what it does. Most businesses will subscribe to Astalti, you know, an accounting software like Xero or similar, and then they'll have their Microsoft or Google to power their email. And ideally, that'd be all they need.
And talk to me about where the business stands today.
So now we're a team of five. We're doing seven figures ARR and, you know, still growing significantly every month. So it's in a really good spot.
And this has happened very quickly. Probably doesn't feel that way. I know your timeline always feels really long. But when I actually read through it, because you were very generous to send me the entire timeline, which is what we're going to work off for here, it seems like from actual paid launch until seven-figure ARR was less than 2 years?
I think around 18 months we worked it out to be.
Unbelievable. That is so fast.
From when we launched our first paid offering to, well, when we hit seven figures.
Unbelievable. And so one thing before we dive in, because here's what I want to cover for someone listening to this. It's to figure out how you got here this quickly, and then to pull out things that you and your co-founder did really well where you were smart, and then potentially where there were things where you maybe got lucky, where you, as we, you and I saw in Atlanta, because you were at MicroConf Atlanta, which is how we met, where potentially, you know, as Ben Chestnut said, they Forrest Gumped their way in, they kind of stumbled, they got a little lucky, and that's okay too. Like, it's not 100% luck, it's that along the way, sometimes you do things and they, you know, they turn out really well. Before we dive into that though, Astalte, you told me, stands for a solution that actually listens to you. Is it a dad joke? It's like, it's not a good acronym. What's the deal with it?
I think when we came up with it, we had much, much worse business ideas. And a lot of businesses in the space had care or health or these types of words in their business name. And we didn't want to be that. And the whole premise behind Astalte was that we felt that software was built by people that have no idea about the actual business problems that they were solving. And at the time, we thought, why not try an acronym? And this kind of came out and then it stuck. So we don't put that acronym everywhere, but it's a very sticky business name and people remember it. Yeah. And, you know, but it does actually drive a lot of our, I guess, culture around how we invest time with our customers and build features, I suppose.
And astalte.com.au, if folks want to check out your website, you touched on something right there that I want to dig a little deeper into. You talked about how let me just say this. In deep verticals where there's a lot of subject matter expertise required to build a good tool, we see one of two mistakes usually. We see a software developer who comes into it and doesn't actually understand the business problems. And so then they build, it can be good software, but it doesn't do the business any justice, right? It doesn't actually solve the problem. Or vice versa. We see subject matter experts who are like, I'm in roofing construction and I'm going to hire a developer. But they're not a product person. So they have the subject matter expertise of what it should do, but the product sucks. You and your co-founder are a developer and a subject matter expert. And that combination is in the top three co-founder combos that we see, right? I've invested 191 companies, and the top three, in no particular order, it's kind of all tied for one in my head, is a developer plus a marketer, or a developer plus a salesperson, depending on if it's, you know, a higher to low touch funnel, and developer plus subject matter experts, as long as that subject matter expert is willing to do the sales or the marketing. And so you and your co-founder, you're the developer, right? And your co-founder was in the NDIS system. Does he have a consultancy or a software company in there?
He has an NDIS service provider business. So he actually is, you know, one of our, his business uses our software. And we'd been talking about the NDIS for early days. My job was to try and decode what he was saying and think, how can we solve these processes using software? And I think that kind of unique position is part of the reason why we built such a good product.
Yeah, that makes sense. In a space like this, you would need, I don't know that you would need a co-founder, it would sure help, but you would really want a, like what we call like a patient zero, a customer zero, you know, who really is on board with being able to advise you, or you'd need an advisor or an advisory board, two or three people who all had NDIS. So you could have done it different ways, but this to me is one of the ideal ways, because then he has so much skin in the game, right?
Yep.
And if he was willing to help with sales and marketing as well. Something that, if we roll the calendar back 3 years, we're recording this in June of 24, we roll back to June of 21, you talked about development work on Astalte starting slowly, and that you were going to try to do everything that a CRM in the space had to do, but then you realized that you would probably do that quite poorly. And so you instead streamlined to just focusing on support coordination. This is I think a lesson that a lot of developers screw up, is they don't want to build an MVP with limited functionality, or they don't want to focus the thing down thinking they didn't solve a big enough problem. And so I guess it sounds like that was the right choice for you. And how did you come to that? How'd you come to that conclusion?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, Jono, my co-founder, when he was explaining everything, I was thinking, you know, this is fine. We can do this. And then we started and we're like, we need this thing, and that means we need this thing. And then the waterfall just got so big. And then we wanted to get to market quickly. So what we did is we really said, well, where's the gap? And we focused on that. And then I'm really glad we did it back then, because if we came to that realization 12 months later, it would have been an absolute mess. And it's kind of funny, because through that process of really focusing on a niche within a niche, you could say we actually built 90% of the functionality that we need to serve the whole NDIS space. It's just that there's one kind of scheduling piece, and that's what we're working on building now. So it was just interesting that by niching down, we were still able to build functionality that would help us serve the customers that we wanted to serve initially, if that makes sense.
It does. It does. And so you're co-founder, you and he are talking through NDIS, and he's probably saying there's no good software on the market, right? He's saying there's a huge gap. What was his company using before you built Astalte?
They were using another software that they actually still use because it does the functionality that Astalte doesn't quite do. So they use both at the moment. And yeah, there was just no innovation in the space that we felt. So we came out and surprised, you know, you put a really nice, easy to use interface on something, you speak the language that your customers speak, and you make the product easy to use, which sounds so simple, right? But it's just, it's funny how far that could actually go.
How many NDIS providers are there in Australia?
I think probably a couple of hundred thousand. Yeah, there's heaps, you know, and they range from sole traders. They could be sole traders up to the top 10, which might have a few thousand employees. So there's a really wide range of sizes of businesses.
That's a big market to not have a really well-built tool. When I think of any market in the U.S. that has couple hundred thousand businesses that would be willing to pay, there are a lot of tools available for them, many of which are decent, you know, some of which are reviled, but I'm kind of surprised by that. Why do you think that vertical, there are probably listeners right now salivating, thinking, oh my gosh, I wish I could, you know, only 2 years ago, there was a market this big that didn't have software. Why is that the case? Why has no one attacked this?
I think there's certainly software that exists, but it was built like 10 years ago, 6 years ago, and they got into the space and they probably solved the problem that existed 6 years ago and thought, great, we've solved it. I mean, this is my opinion anyway. And then I think they kind of said, great, we've solved it. Let's just stay here. And that's fine. But at the pace that the technology moves, at the pace that the NDIS itself moves, you need to be able to iterate fast and change and listen and pivot. And I think that is another huge factor to our success. So there's certainly software that existed, but just not up to speed, I suppose.
And so as you're building the software, you start in June of 21 writing the code. 6-7 months later, you're in January 2022, and you launch a free Chrome extension, which, you know, you talk about NDIS has a price guide, and the Chrome extension allows you to search the price guide in real time, I guess, in Chrome.
Yep.
My question for this one, I have a note next to it, and it says smart or lucky, because a lot of engineers want to do engineering as marketing because we are builders. And if I can write code instead of marketing, or if I can write code as marketing, I'm going to do that, right? So what I wonder is if, like, were you pretty calculated about this? Like, yeah, I'm all in. I'm in on this. It's a lead gen. I'm going to build this thing. It's going to do it. And you were confident? Or was it kind of like, well, might as well throw this thing together. Maybe it'll work. Maybe it won't.
It came about because Jono and I were actually, because we had to have some of this price guide functionality in Astalte to kind of get your business set up. And I think we were looking at the price guide and we were like, man, this sucks. I can't believe we have to search through this. And then somehow we got onto the concept of extensions, and I'd never built one. I thought, I wonder how hard it would be just to throw this in the browser, because we use quite a few extensions and they're just so handy. And then I guess we were calculated in the sense that we could use it as a lead gen, get our name out there. You know, we were calculated in that way. Did we think it would have the uptake that it did? No. But when we built it and when other people started using it, everyone was thinking, why doesn't this exist already? So we were kind of first doing that. And then we've seen a couple of others come along. But yeah, I would say maybe a combination of we know what we wanted to do. Did we know exactly what that pathway would be? Probably not, no.
Right. So a combination, like a lot of things. And then the next month, February 22, you launch Astalte Lite, which, as you said, is a free-to-use CRM that would hopefully get customers engaged and on the platform. By August of that year, you had 450 users to the free platform, and you specifically said, and I like this data point, of those, a few dozen were engaging us and providing feedback about the platform. Because that's usually what happens. You get hundreds or thousands of free users, and there's 2%, 3% that are likely to upgrade. So it's similar with this one. You kind of went freemium, or like free, like I guess the first question is, like, is that still a free plan on Astalte, or was that just kind of a preview? So you do still have a free plan.
We do. It's not very utilized because it doesn't have your invoicing, which is such a core, you know, time saver that Astalte gives you. So we do still have it.
And the similar with that, like, were you smart there to be like, oh, if we get this, we get the buzz and we get people in it? Or did you kind of get lucky? Because most free offerings don't work. Like most people don't know how to do it and they kind of backfire and you like devalue your product and then you have a bunch of on and on and on. But it seems like it worked for, well, I guess the question is like, did it work for you and was it intentional or did you, you know, was it a little lucky in that one?
Astolfi Light was very calculated, absolutely. So when we were building, we were thinking, I think by that time we were thinking we would have our paid offering out and that just didn't happen. So I think by the time we got to Astolfi Light being launched, we wanted to have our paid offering out and we wanted to get to the market early. And we thought the best way to do that is to give people the functionality because we also needed feedback from our potential customers. So it was a way to provide value, which was good for our engagement, getting a brand awareness, and also good to get people using the product. Did we know that people would actually use it? Probably not. But even though it wasn't, I guess, validation, which is something, you know, that I didn't even know at the time, or we didn't know at the time, the fact that people were actually engaging and giving us feedback, even though they weren't buying, for us was a very good signal that people are enjoying what we're building. And some of those customers, you know, now pay us every month. So that's great.
What would the signal have been? Like, let's say barely anyone signed up for Astolfi Light. Because I almost view it as a nice MVP or like a validation signal, right? Where you were kind of still like, well, are people using it? And when they are, you're like, oh, this raises my motivation. Because that's what you need as a bootstrap founder is motivation, right? You're not running out of money, but you're like, ah, should I keep building this? Or is this the right thing or whatever? So it sounds like it was pretty motivating. What would you have done if like 10 people signed up and no one used it? Would it have been like, bail on the idea, this isn't going to work?
No, absolutely not. And this is a pretty important point, I guess, for me, because I put my whole other software development company on hold and I was going to make Astolfi, like we were going to make Astolfi work, period. There was no second option. So if that didn't work, we would have pivoted. We would have reached out to people. We would have done whatever it took to make that work. I think in your book or on a podcast, you talk about roadblocks versus speed bumps. And this is something that I try and, you know, we try and really put into practice that we would have just changed. We would have pivoted, got more feedback, changed the product and gone from there.
So that was February 22. So then in August, you essentially launch a paid plan, Astolfi Pro, Astolfi Professional. It's $50 a month per user and you gave a discount at launch. So $50 a month per user is like, that's decent pricing. A lot of startups when they launch, I'm like, oh, they're 10% of the price they should be, you know, 10x below or 5x below. But at 50 per seat, I'm imagining you said there's these teams of, there are teams of thousands literally, but if a team of 10, right, you're talking $500 average revenue per account on that. Did you look at competition? How did you come to that price? Because it seems like you're pretty smart on it.
Lots and lots of hours. People think software, building software is hard. Pricing is the hardest part of
tell me about it.
It was extremely, extremely difficult. And I think we did the discount because we thought, if we launch at the 30% discount and 49 is too expensive, then at least we can kind of revert, you know, down to that 30% off. We did look at some of our competitors and we were cheaper than some and more expensive than some. I guess what was really interesting is the fact that we stayed at 49 and we probably tripled the number of, you know, the functionality that you could do through the platform. And our customers, I guess, had that trust in us that we were going to deliver on what we said that we were going to deliver. So we got it right, I think, in the end. But yeah, it was lots and lots of time on the phone talking about it.
Obviously, I've been thinking about your business for approximately 25 minutes or something. I don't know it that well, but it feels directionally correct of like $50 a seat. That's a pretty good price. And depending on what, you know, to get a full picture, obviously, I'd want to look at all your competition and that, you know, there's a bunch of other stuff, but like it certainly doesn't seem too terribly low. And I guess it started paying off, right? Because by December of that year, which you launched in August, you're 5 months, 6 months later, is that even or like 4 or 5 months later, you're at almost 9,000 MRR.
Yep.
Which is a kind of a Cinderella story, right? I mean, how many people are listening to this podcast thinking, I've been working on this, I've been launched for 2 or 3 years and I'm not at 9K MRR. Aside from getting the things right that you got that we've already covered, like, was there something else? Like, are you a good marketer? Is your co-founder doing a lot of marketing? Like, how is there so much interest and fast growth? I mean, you got a couple hundred paying users, you know, in that 5 months. What was the key there?
I think the biggest key is that the product was so good, and that's a combination of Jono, my co-founder, having such a good understanding of the NDIS and being able to translate that into software. And the fact that the businesses that use our software essentially charge $100 an hour for their service. So we only had to save our customers half an hour a month per user to see the value. And our invoicing alone was saving businesses, in some cases, two whole days a fortnight. So it becomes very easy, I think, for our customers to justify the cost. And in the early days, we just did everything. We were both doing the demos. We were getting on calls with the smallest users. If it was a five, we would literally be building features to get customers in that it was missing. So we were just doing everything we had to do to get these customers on board. And like I said, my business partner with such a good understanding of the NDIS, I think we were able to leverage his network and his knowledge of what people are really looking for.
Got it. Yeah. You know, you'll hear me say, if you listen to the podcast, build your network, not your audience. So it sounds like you guys didn't have an audience of NDIS folks, but he did have a network, right? Of folks who would be willing to try it, to give feedback, to potentially spread the word.
Yeah, exactly. And if you can go to a business and say, hey, pay us $50 a month for a sole trader, for example, and we'll save you 10 hours a month, it's kind of hard to say no to.
So that raises the question, like, do you feel like you might be underpriced? Like, could you charge $100 a seat or $150? Or, you know, what is the place where that breaks? Usually it's if there's a replacement. It's they can either do it with a clipboard, Excel spreadsheet, or there's other software where they're just like, forget it, I'm not. Even though this is the best tool, there's an alternative that is like good enough.
The pricing scales well for all sizes of businesses, we feel. So we didn't want to make our pricing complicated. You have one user, you'd pay this. You have five users, you pay that. I just wanted the billing to be super straightforward. So I feel like our price point, maybe we could charge more for smaller businesses. But then if you have, say, 20 users or 30 users, it does start to get quite expensive each month. So we charge the same for all sizes of businesses at the moment. And we're comfortable with that. Could we charge more? Maybe. But I guess you don't know until you actually try it, right?
So you end 2022 at just under 9K. You end 2023 at almost 60K MRR. So the story continues. Did anything change? Did you do anything differently during 23 to get to that? I mean, you 6X'd. You're approaching, you know, a million already. Was it more the same, or was there anything during that year that just lit a fire under the growth?
I think because we had such good word of mouth, our reach was kind of exponential. The more users we had, the more people that were talking about our product, the more people that would see that. And so it was kind of like a self-fulfilling hamster wheel, in the sense that we just got more people really enjoying using the product, and they would tell two people, and then they would tell two people each. And so that kind of grew and our user base quite quickly. We also did some offers, 3 months free. We did a Black Friday sale. So that stuff sort of drove our growth. And we always ask ourselves, would they have joined even if we didn't do those offers? I'm not sure. It doesn't really matter now. And funnily enough, we only made our first hire in October of that year. So I think more people were just talking about the product. And of course, we were adding more and more functionality that we needed as well. So we were kind of growing the market that we could sell to.
And this is something I want to call out to someone listening. This is the reason that at the beginning of this year, when I made predictions for 2024, I said vertical SaaS, and later added orthogonal SaaS, which is like role-based or title-based, will continue to be incredible places for bootstrappers. And we've kind of been seeing that over the past few years, but even more. And there's reasons for this, and you've pretty much enumerated all of them. One is that word of mouth in small verticals is like wildfire, way more than the examples I always bring up of horizontal SaaS are like Signwell and SavvyCal, right? And they, word of mouth can be fine, but it's not wildfire in those spaces versus Gymdesk and Astalti, where it travels real quick. The other thing is the folks in these verticals hang out in the same spaces. They're in the Slack groups. They're in the Facebook groups. They're at the same in-person events. If they have a trade publication, a magazine or something, it goes to like 50,000 to 100,000 people. Like it's very small in the scheme of things. It's not so big. In addition, marketing in these spaces usually is not that expensive or not very well done. You're not competing against Google, Microsoft, Facebook, and Netflix. Netflix is not an example, but you know, these other like companies. If you were building a Google Docs competitor, for example, not only does your product have to be incredible because these horizontal products are usually pretty good or have a lot of features at least, but your marketing has to be that. And Assaulties in the NDIS provider space, a space I had never heard of, you know, before looking at Rate One. So, and then pricing is the other one, is usually you can just charge a lot more. If I'm buying Microsoft Word or competing against Google Sheets, you know that the price goes to zero. If I build Microsoft Word for academics who write in Hebrew or whatever, I should charge 10, 20 times, you know, Microsoft Word at least. And you in this space of like, well, couldn't someone use Basecamp or Salesforce to do their NDI? You know what I mean? It's like, aren't there horizontal tools? Yeah, probably. But you should be able to charge for a specialized tool. You have pricing power because you're not a commodity. And whether you can charge more or not is one part of the question. But the other one is that you do, in fact, your pricing is not going to zero.
Yep. And there's two really important things that we did that you just mentioned. So the first one is that we actually go to in-person events, which is probably an important piece that I missed. And we were aware of these events. And essentially, the person, it's kind of like a speed dating setup. You sit down, there's a circle on the other side of the table, and they all rotate. You give 5 minutes to kind of sell your thing. And the customers on the other side were kind of like 80% our ideal customer. And we were thinking, why are none of our, I mean, hopefully they're not listening, but why are none of our competitors going to these things? So we started going, and they have been fantastic because we could actually demo the product right in front of them, and our product was the best marketing that we had. So that was another key to our success. And the other thing was around Facebook groups. So a lot of these businesses do hang out in Facebook groups. And I really remember in the early days, people, we'd go into these Facebook groups and we'd search for the keyword software, and we'd think, I wonder if anyone's asking what software to use. And so many people would be, you know, what CRM are you using? What software are you using? How do you handle your invoicing? And they'd be saying all these different companies. And Jono and I said, wouldn't it be nice if that was a Stolte getting talked about there? And I think about 3 days ago, and this happens, you know, fairly frequently now, but 3 days ago, somebody asked what software should we use? And I think there was 22 comments, and 20 out of the 22 were a Stolte. And not just a Stolte, but a Stolte is great. I wish I went to a Stolte earlier. Talk to a Stolte. The support is amazing. So all of our reviews are actually more kind of, and if you look at our Google as well, all the reviews are really in-depth. They take the time. And I feel like that's a very good indicator that people enjoy being here and just being part of the Stolte community and network.
Yeah. And that's great to have that. Here's the assessment. You know, I asked Jason Fried years ago on MicroConf, like, why did Basecamp work? Right. And he said, luck and timing were one and two, but we also did a lot of things right. And I don't think luck and timing were one and two for you, actually. I think the fact that you had a co-founder who really was deep in the space and that you're obviously a gifted product person were probably one and two. And I think you did a bunch. And there's luck somewhere in there. And then I think you also did a lot of things right. And that's one of them. You said your support is lightning fast. I think your average response time is 45 minutes or something. You know, you've obviously really cared a lot about your customers. Someone can listen to this, and any of these things individually, you can't cherry pick these. You can't say, well, I'm just going to do that one, and I'm just going to do that one, and it's going to succeed. It's like, you need a lot of these in the same direction. And in your case, we could pull some of these off, and you still would have been successful. Like, if your support was not amazing, you'd probably still be winning, because I think your incumbents are just not great. Having never used them, I know what type of software that is, you know? So I think some of these you could have left, but I think the combination of all of them is what makes a big difference.
I was just going to say on that point, in the early days, these all feel like one percenters and they feel like this is making no difference. When a customer signs up and I call them, that's not going to make a difference at all. But when you kind of compound that effort over months and years, then you see the payoff. And it's not that hard to do. While you need to duck out, go to the grocery store, pick up the kids from daycare, jot down a customer's number and just call them. How many times have you signed up to a software platform and got a phone call, not from a salesperson, but just from somebody saying, hey, welcome to ABC product. If there's anything I can do, just sing out. And I honestly can't remember the last time, if any time that's happened to me. And that's something that we do. So a lot of these things, people were just so refreshed because a lot of our competitors don't have phone support. In the early days, we're thinking this is going to be painful, but let's do it anyway. And they are painful in the early days, and they feel like they're not making a difference. But if you stick with it, eventually, if you invest time into your customers, they will give it back to you 10x, 100x in some cases.
Before I move on to what I think will be my last question for you, I did want to call back to you and I were just talking about in-person events, and you were mentioning how valuable they were. And that would have been my guess, actually. I don't think it was in the timeline, and you and I hadn't talked about it, but I would have guessed for this business, net negative churn, which you have, and in-person events. So I have these things, I call them the big five B2B SaaS marketing approaches, and it's content, SEO, cold outreach, integrations, partnerships as one, and ads, right? And so I haven't written on, you know, on this thing. I refer to it all the time. But my next five depend on the type of business. And it depends on the lifetime value and all this stuff. My next five are in-person events, free tools, so like engineering is marketing, podcast tour, affiliates, and Capterra or G2. And I separate those from ads, even though they're kind of the same thing. The events one, when it works, it really works. And it works usually in tight verticals, and you need a high enough annual contract value to make it work. So it is definitely fits my kind of mind map of your type of business, of this vertical with a $50, $60 per seat price point with all that. So it's not surprising to me at all that how valuable the in-person events have been for you.
And we've just, Jono, my co-founder, he's actually working really hard. We've just launched a partners and affiliates program as well. So we have a lot of consultants in the space, as you can imagine, being a kind of complicated area. So now we're engaging with consultants and other businesses that have similar customer base and trying to partner with them. And we've got an affiliate program, refer a friend. We've got ongoing commissions. We're kind of doing all these things now, which is, again, just kind of compounding on everything else that we're doing, which is fantastic.
I want to leave us on this high note of you did a very clever price increase. And I don't even know if you would call it a price increase, but it was the way you described it to me was, I was like, I don't know that I've ever heard anyone do it this way. And so I want to bring it up so that someone listening might think about doing it the same way. So we talked about how you had a Stalti Pro or Professional. You still do. That is a tier of the software, $49 a month. Just a few months ago, and that's how you've been for 2 years, right? So just a couple months ago in February of 24, you launched a Stalti Premium. That was an early access, new price point, $64 per user per month. And you had built a bunch of functionality. You didn't just want to throw it in the 49, so you built Premium. So not only did you get a bunch of people upgrading from a Stalti Pro, but you said if you go to the pricing page right now, it's kind of hidden. Is it, you say we kind of hide professionals. So you must be able to click a link and get to it or something. So that actually most people are signing up at $64 a month and getting full functionality. Did I summarize that correctly?
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think when we launched, like on within the first week, 30% of our existing customers upgraded straight away.
So, interesting. So if you had gone in and just said, hey, this is the hack, this is the cleverness, is you could have put all those features and all that functionality into Pro and then said, by the way, we're raising your price to 64 because we launched this stuff. And guess what? Some people would have been cool with it and some people would have been really pissed. But you actually launched a separate plan that's too close. $15 is too close. Like if you told me I was going to do 49, 64 as my price points, I'd be like, no, move them far apart. But you were kind of going for a incognito price increase, right? And this sounds like it was pretty deliberate.
Yep. And the price difference was also very deliberate. We wanted it to be a no-brainer. And Professional is actually now $59 a month for new customers. So it's only $5 extra. And we gave everybody on Professional a four-week trial. And the premium features are pretty sticky. You can generate contracts. You can send things for e-signing. You can track documentation. There's like a lot of things that are built in that are super, super valuable. And we said, well, let's just give everybody 4 weeks to give this a go. And it's kind of like once you get a taste of it, you don't want to not have it. And then we kind of changed our pricing page. I think 98 or 95% of new customers sign up to the $64 a month plan, which is fantastic. So yeah, we kind of did a price increase without doing a price increase.
And so the next, end of this year, are you doing $79 a month for a Stalti Gold? Is that where we go next? A Stalti Platinum?
$79 was actually going to be the price point of Premium, and we thought, let's bring it down and try and go for more volume. And I'm very glad we did, because I think $79 would have been a little bit too, you know, once you kind of get up around the sevens, eights, nines, those numbers start to look a lot bigger, especially for bigger teams. When we launched the kind of next functionality, which is scheduling and rostering, we will actually have a cheaper price point for that because the user type is different. They're only going to be on the platform a few hours a week, things like that. But it's all about for us trying to make a Stalti, not just the software, but through our partners, through our resources, through the software itself, through the support, just a place that you want to be. And I kind of use this analogy of not choosing the least worst option. And I think about tools like Slack as one of those. You choose Slack as the least worst option to solve that problem for you, right? And then I don't know if you know a tool called Linea, which is an issue tracking kind of like Jira. Mm-hmm. And whenever I use Linea, I think I enjoy using this software. Like, I want to use this software. And we want people to feel the same way about our software. And you can't do that just through product or support or resources. You kind of have to have everything. Come to us and we'll look after you, whatever you need. If we can't do it, we'll let you know about somebody who can. So we're just about providing value. And I think people really appreciate that. It's quite refreshing as well.
Yeah, James, big congratulations on you and your co-founder's success. Like, you've built a heck of a business. And I hope, as listeners have heard this, that they take a bunch of things away, that you did a lot of things right, and that you and your co-founder made smart choices. There was probably some luck involved in a few of them, but I think you would have succeeded with almost minimal luck because of all the things that were in place, like your founding team construction I already talked about, developer plus subject matter expert. You backed off on building an entire CRM, and instead you built like the support coordination piece of it. Like, you limited the scope. You marketed before you were coding. Right? You built the Chrome extension. You built a Salty Lite as marketing. You picked what sounds like a market with a kind of a big hole in it. You built vertical SaaS. You increased your prices multiple times. You priced well from the start. Like, you did a lot of things right. So
I just want to kind of point out the other thing about doing things right. If you're not f***ing things up along the way, you're not going to get there. It's more about being able to not be afraid of being wrong. If you get it wrong, change fast. And the speed of being able to iterate is super, super important. The quicker you can eliminate the wrong things to do, the faster you'll arrive at the right things to do. So I think it's kind of nice that we get to this point and everyone's like, well, you did all these things right. Like, now, sure. But, you know, when you're going through that process, you do a lot of things wrong, and that's absolutely fine. If you're not doing things wrong, that's where you learn what's not going to work. So I think that's just an important point.
I like that a lot. That's something A&R and I tell to our tiny seed companies all the time, of like, you got to move fast. You're going to make some bad decisions. You're going to make some wrong decisions, but you need to do a lot of things such that you work mostly on the right things.
Like Ben Chestnut says, stab in the dark, but stab very fast.
Exactly. Super impressive, man. It's a great business you built. If folks want to see what you're up to, they can go to astalti.com.au. And is there anywhere else online that you hang out? Like, I looked for, I don't think you have a Twitter account, but is there anything is it LinkedIn where people could maybe keep up with you?
Yeah, I mean, LinkedIn is probably the best place. I'm kind of on Twitter, but not super active there, but certainly on LinkedIn.
And so folks want to find you on LinkedIn. You are James Mooring, M-O-O-R-I-N-G. And you live in Australia. On LinkedIn, what if there's 25 James Moorings? How are they going to know it's you? Astalti, right? That's going to be you need one more piece. When I search for people's names in Google, and I'm like, James Mooring Twitter. And it's like, there's like 20 of them. So then I usually throw in a company name, and that gets me there. So James, once again, thank you so much for joining me on the show today.
Not a problem. Thanks. Really appreciate it.
Thanks again to James for joining me on the show. And thanks to you for joining me this week and every week. I did a call for more advanced questions, because obviously a lot of the questions that I get on the show are from folks looking to validate ideas or just very early stage, and that's fine. But I know that there are a lot of listeners to this show that are doing 10K, 100K, 300K a month or more. There are folks out there right now thinking, yeah, I'm doing a lot more than that. And I don't want to give the impression that this show is only for new folks just getting started. There's so many people doing 7 and 8 figures in the MicroConf community, in the TinySeed community, and even in the Startups for the Rest of Us audience. So if you saw my question on Twitter, thank you for responding. I got 10, 15 really good questions that are for folks who are building great businesses and not just about early stage stuff. And of course, I will continue to accept those and answer them in future episodes. You can always submit questions by going to startupsfortherestofus.com, hit ask a question in the top nav and ask them there, or you can respond to me on Twitter. Thanks so much. This is Rob Walling signing off from episode 722.